This is Free Speech Radio News for Wednesday, September 13th, 2006. From KPFA in Berkeley, I'm Aaron Glantz, filling in for Aldo Bogado. The Bush administration pushes its domestic spying program in Congress. A Colorado school district walks away from the No Child Left Behind Act. And a California man appeals his life sentence for lying about a driver's license. Those stories and more after the headlines.
I'm Shannon Young with the Free Speech Radio News headlines. British Prime Minister Tony Blair today called on NATO members to contribute 2,500 more troops to Afghanistan. Despite his appeal, there is still no formal offer of help on the part of member states. Naomi Fowler reports from London.
There are currently more than 18,500, mainly NATO soldiers, in Afghanistan, and around the same number of US troops. But this so-called war on terror is becoming more protracted and dangerous than many anticipated. 26 British soldiers have been killed in the past month in Afghanistan, and top British military figures have publicly denounced what they see as the lack of commitment from other NATO member states to share a burden they feel is disproportionately falling on the British and Canadian military. Tony Blair made a personal appeal today.
NATO is looking at what further requirements there are. And NATO and NATO countries have got a duty to respond to that. The British forces are making their contribution.
But each member state has differing rules of engagement, and many have always been less enthusiastic than the UK about the US's so-called war on terror, which began after the 9/11 attacks. This is Naomi Fowler in London for Free Speech Radio News.
Nine states plus the District of Columbia held primary elections yesterday. Senator Lincoln Chafee, a moderate Republican, beat the more conservative Steve Laffey in the Rhode Island primary. Even though he doesn't support the war in Iraq or tax breaks, the Republican Party supported Chafee as the more moderate candidate to run in Rhode Island. In New York, Attorney General Elliot Spitzer won the Democratic nomination for governor, and Senator Hillary Clinton defeated an opponent with an anti-war stance. As for Maryland, Representative Ben Cardin leads the polls over former NAACP leader Kwesi Mfume for the Democratic Party nomination for a seat in the Senate. The winner of the Democratic primary in Minnesota could be the first Muslim American elected to Congress. State Representative Keith Ellison will run in a Democratic district and is favored to win the general election. The American Lung Association has just released a report slamming new standards for dust and soot pollution that the Environmental Protection Agency is expected to finalize later this month. From KPFA in Berkeley, Brian Edwards-Tiekert has more.
The Environmental Protection Agency is under a court order that requires new limits on dust and soot in the air by the end of this month. Since EPA set the current standard in 1997, more than 2,000 peer-reviewed studies have been published on the health effects of fine particulate matter. Many show it does serious damage at levels well below the current standard. Janice Nolan is National Policy Director for the American Lung Association. She says EPA's proposed changes barely make any change.
If everybody met the current standard, there would still be nearly 5,000 deaths a year from particle pollution. Under EPA's proposal, that only drops by about a fifth. If you look at the proposal that we're recommending, it's nearly 90% of those premature deaths are avoided.
The proposed rules also contain controversial language that exempts mining and agriculture from regulation. The Environmental Protection Agency is required to announce a final decision by September 27th. I'm Brian Edwards-Tiekert for Free Speech Radio News.
Nigerian oil workers are on a three-day warning strike to protest growing insecurity in the country's oil-rich Niger Delta region. Samuel Lokoya reports from Lagos.
Officials from Nigeria's two oil workers' unions say the strike has been effective. The loading of crude oil for export from some of Nigeria's terminals has been suspended. The oil workers hope the strike will force the government to address the growing insecurity situation oil workers face in the Niger Delta. In recent months, militants demanding a share of the region's oil wealth have kidnapped more than 40 foreign oil workers. The oil workers' unions and government officials have been holding meetings aimed at ending the strike in Africa's top oil exporter. Workers have threatened to embark on an indefinite strike if the government does not take measures to guarantee their security in the Niger Delta. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Sam Olukoya in Lagos.
Members of an organized movement of poor tenants in shack settlements in Durban, South Africa, were attacked last night by police. Naeem Jina reports from Johannesburg.
Durban's Kennedy Road shack settlement seemed to be under military rule last night after police attacked residents preparing to march to a nearby police station. About 500 members of the shack dwellers movement, Abahlali Basemjondolo, met in the settlement to discuss the arrest of three of their leaders a few hours earlier. They decided to march to the police station when they heard that the men would not be released on bond. As they exited the settlement, police opened fire with rubber bullets and live ammunition, wounding a 50-year-old woman. For the rest of the night, the settlement was deathly silent as residents took cover in their shacks as the armed security forces patrolled the area. The Freedom of Expression Institute said the police action was illegal and unconstitutional. The organization says the incident is indicative of a broader environment of repression in the country, where citizens' constitutional rights are flagrantly violated by state forces. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Naeem Jina in Johannesburg.
And I'm Shannon Young for Free Speech Radio News.
Mixed results today in the Bush administration's quest to get congressional approval for domestic surveillance of U.S. residents. The Senate moved one step closer, and the House of Representatives pulled the bill from its agenda. From Washington, FSRN's Leanne Caldwell reports.
After months of deliberation, disagreements, and stall tactics, the Senate Judiciary Committee passed three pieces of legislation regarding the president's domestic surveillance program of Americans. It's called the Terrorist Surveillance Program by the administration. The lead bill passed along a party-line vote. All Republicans supported the legislation authored by Chair of the Judiciary Committee Arlen Specter and the White House. The White House has put pressure on Congress in recent weeks to pass this legislation. It would allow the president broad authority in intelligence surveillance. The president contends he has inherent power under Article 2 of the Constitution to authorize the surveillance of Americans without getting a warrant from the specified courts, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Courts, or FISA. Critics are dismayed. They say the Specter-Cheney bill authorizes the president to act outside his legal authority. Senator Specter says that's an issue for the courts to decide.
A statute cannot add or detract from constitutional authority. Eventually, it's going to be decided by the Supreme Court of the United States.
The Specter-Cheney bill would allow the president to continue to wiretap Americans, those who are suspected of communicating with terrorists or their organizations. It would also allow the Department of Justice to submit any other surveillance program that could be happening to the FISA courts for approval. But it's unclear if Specter-Cheney will receive enough votes in the full Senate. It's a bill many Democrats defiantly oppose. Again, Senator Specter.
I think the core point is going to be whether FISA is the exclusive approach. And the reality is it is not. Wiretapping is going on now, which violates FISA.
Alternative legislation by Democrat Dianne Feinstein from California could act as the middle ground. Her legislation gives FISA additional tools, resources, and time to provide warrants for domestic surveillance. But in giving the additional resources, it mandates that the FISA court is the only body allowed to decide if an American can be wiretapped, thus limiting the president's power. But things aren't looking good for the Feinstein legislation to be brought to the full Senate for a vote. Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist has final say, and he has given no indication whether or not he'll allow hers to be debated. The White House opposes the measure, as do many Republicans. But the Specter-Cheney legislation could need the support of 60 votes to pass, which makes the fate of both bills uncertain. Meanwhile, in the House, the Judiciary Committee hit a major roadblock on its surveillance legislation. The bill, sponsored by Representative Heather Wilson, Republican from New Mexico, would allow the president to surveil U.S. citizens for 60 days after a terrorist attack, even if that terrorist attack happened overseas. As the news came that the legislation would not be brought up as expected, cheers outside the committee room came from Democratic staffers. They said this bill gives the president expanded powers unheard of to collect mass quantities of information, keep it on record, and share it with other agencies. It would severely undermine civil liberties, they said. Bruce Fine is an attorney and former official with the Reagan administration.
The administration could ask, for instance, the FISA court to authorize physical searches of every home in the United States on the theory that if we search everything, something will turn up, which would be the end of the Fourth Amendment and privacy, because you can always have the possibility of something turning up if you look at enough places and enough people's private possessions.
The House Judiciary Committee could bring up the legislation again any time. Democrats, though, have an alternate proposal planned. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Leanne Caldwell.
A California immigrant serving a life sentence for lying to the Department of Motor Vehicles got a day in court today. Santos Reyes has already served 6 years for that crime, which he has never denied. Peter Camejo is Green Party candidate for California governor and a spokesman for the campaign to free Santos Reyes.
They were trying to get a driver's license for his cousin, but his cousin can't read. The crime that Santos did was to take the written test for his cousin, and he got caught doing that. They got suspicious and they started asking him questions, and he just immediately admitted it, that yes, he was just trying to get a driver's license for his cousin because they need it for work and he needs to feed his family. So they called the policeman. The policeman arrested him.
When they took Reyes to jail, the police found he had been convicted of felonies twice before. In 1981, at age 17, he was convicted of stealing a boombox. 5 years later, he was convicted of robbery. Since then, he's married, bore two children, and gained regular employment as a roofer. But as an undocumented immigrant, he couldn't drive legally, and neither could his cousin. Again, the Green Party's Peter Camejo.
The cousin was also undocumented. You got to understand something. His name, there was a criminal record on him. So to try to get a fake driver's license under his name was very difficult. But they were trying to, you know, there's many tricks that people use to get driver's licenses. You understand what happens if you drive illegally. When they catch you, they take your car and steal it from you. It's not returned to you. The state sells it and keeps the money. It's a form of robbery of the poor.
California has the toughest three strikes law in the nation. And under the terms of the law, everyone convicted of a third felony, no matter what kind, serves a mandatory sentence of 25 years to life. 4,500 California prisoners are currently serving life sentences for crimes as minor as stealing a slice of pizza. Dorothy Erskine's nephew is currently serving a life sentence for aiding and abetting shoplifting.
He was an addict, a cocaine addict, and this led to his criminal activities. But in 1994, he was in a mall in Cerritos, and these two women were on the same floor as him taking sheets, and they stopped him when he left the store, and even though he didn't have any merchandise from the department store, he was convicted of aiding and abetting shoplifting, and he has been in ever since.
Erskine and other families want to change California's three strikes law so that only serious or violent felonies can send criminals to prison for life. Opponents of the three strikes law also argue for changes in immigration law so that undocumented immigrants like Santos Reyes don't have to lie to get a driver's license. But the backlash has been strong to such proposals. In 2003, actor Arnold Schwarzenegger ousted incumbent Democrat Gray Davis, pledging to revoke driving license privileges for undocumented immigrants. In 2004, the state of Arizona passed Proposition 200, which barred all state services for undocumented immigrants. And yesterday, anti-immigrant crusader Randy Graff won a hotly contested congressional primary with the help of the Minutemen, vigilantes who have begun to patrol the U.S.-Mexico border.
We know in general terms that there are a large number of people coming into this country illegally are not coming here just looking for a job.
Randy Graff is the Republican nominee for Congress from an Arizona district that includes Tucson.
Crime rate and statistics certainly along the border down here, problems along the border in Texas with the certain drug smuggling and issues right across the border, all come to the same conclusion that we need to secure the border and stop this invasion and put ourselves in a position where we're not spending hundreds of millions and billions of dollars a year dealing with a problem that would not exist if the federal government lived up to its constitutional responsibility.
Despite the backlash, immigrants and their allies are optimistic about success in the future. The National Republican Party fought Graff's candidacy. fearing it would push a growing population of Latino voters away from voting for the GOP. After California passed the anti-immigrant Proposition 187 in 1994, Latino voter registration soared. Their votes have helped put California firmly in the blue column. The stiff requirements of the No Child Left Behind law have caused consternation in school districts around the country. Some districts have even opted not to comply, which could mean a loss of federal funding. One tiny school district on the plains of Colorado has gone a step further and voted to make up the difference out of its own pockets. Eric Mack reports.
The days seem to begin a little earlier in the small town of Kit Carson, situated in endless fields of wheat, alfalfa, and corn about 40 miles from the Kansas border. Today, the school board for the Kit Carson district is meeting here at 7 a.m.
I believe the county treasurer has overpaid us by about $20,000 in property taxes.
That's Gerald Keefe, district superintendent for the last 12 years. He says that after No Child Left Behind became law, complying with the new rules began to take away from the school's regular operations. So he approached the board with the idea of opting out.
And then the discussion revolved around, should the board just opt out like a couple other districts in Colorado have, or is this something that maybe we should put to our voters and ask them, would they be willing to pay extra property taxes to offset what we lost? We thought that gave more of a clear signal, and we were willing to follow the lead of that vote in making our decision.
A levy was adopted by a handful of votes that would make up for the little more than $20,000 that the district and its 100 students would lose. This fall begins the first school year since the district officially opted out on July 1st. But not everyone in Kit Carson, or even on the school board, thinks it was a good move.
I have a real problem with paying my federal taxes for a school to operate, saying, no, we don't want those, we're going to pay those taxes, and then we're going to tax ourselves again. I see it as a double tax.
Jean Johnson's family has lived and ranched here for four generations. She's a longtime school board member and parent, and she opposed both the levy and opt-out.
I don't support the opt-out because I don't think it's giving the right message. I think we do need accountability, and yeah, in this community we have accountability and we're doing fine, but across this nation, look at our schools, look at our dropout rate, look at what's happening to public education across this country. And if you were president of the United States, you got to do something.
Kit Carson sits in the middle of a county where over 81% of voters cast ballots for President Bush in 2004. Every person this reporter spoke with in town identified themselves as either conservative or Republican. School Board President Jeffrey Wolf works for an oil and gas company in the area and identifies with both labels. He was part of the slim majority that broke with local tradition to approve the new levy.
I'm a big anti-tax guy too, but I did vote for this and because I feel like it's a good thing for the school.
A few programs have already been affected by the opt-out. Some teachers say they've lost grant funding for summer enrichment activities as a result of the decision. But others, like Jeremy McNeely, who leads the school's award-winning music program, have benefited from the move.
Yeah, it has me a lot, actually, because I am not highly qualified in music. You know, I do go take classes and usually receive a credit or two a year, but it's not an intense situation where I'm just having to hump up and spend all kinds of tuition money, you know, trying to get that requirement.
If things don't work out in Kit Carson or changes are made to the law, the levy could be dropped, and the school would have the option of returning to No Child Left Behind's requirements and the funding that comes with it. For Free Speech Radio News in Taos, New Mexico, I'm Eric Mack.
Rebels in northern Uganda were to begin handing over captured women and children this week. Female and child prisoners reportedly served as soldiers, porters, and sex slaves in the Lord's Resistance Army during the group's 20-year campaign against Uganda's central government. The LRA is believed to be holding thousands of children in captivity. Joshua Kalimpa reports.
The UN Undersecretary for Humanitarian Affairs, John Eagland, says he has secured an agreement with the rebels to release the children and women into their custody as they arrive at the assembly points in Sudan.
There are hundreds of women and children on the way to the assembly points, and some of them are sick, some of them are wounded, some of them would be recently abducted. And these are the kind of people we hope would be released. It's an agreement that we will be able to give special care for women and children as they come to the assembly points. It's really too long overdue. It should have happened a long time ago.
But the second in command of the RRA, Vincent Oti, who is already at one of the assembly points in Sudan, says he has no children with him.
I have soldiers. I don't have any underage people with me. Now why should we release others to go back home, leaving us behind? We shall go all together, all of us, at home, because currently, as I am now, I have only commanders, soldiers only, but I cannot release my soldiers without signing a comprehensive agreement. No, that is not correct. He asked me to release some underage to go with him as a good gesture, but I said that I have here combatants only, and I told him that if he comes here to support the peace process, then he should support the peace process so that the peace process goes quickly and finished, because we want to go back home.
The RRA, a cult-like rebel group, is believed to have seized around 10,000 children to serve as porters and sex slaves for its fighters. The Uganda Army, the UPDF, launched a campaign codenamed Operation Iron Fist against the rebels and claimed successes in the operation. But human rights groups always criticized government operations, arguing that innocent children abducted by the rebels were the ones being killed. The Uganda government has no rehabilitation programs for even those child soldiers who will finally come out when the peace deal is finally signed with the RRA, and many of them are likely to be integrated into the Uganda People's Defense Forces. Sam Kutesa, Uganda's Minister for Foreign Affairs, talks about the government's plan for the former child soldiers.
There will be disarmament, then there will be reintegration, there will be resettlement, and those who can go to the army will be retrained. Those who want to go to school will be sent back to school. Those who want to settle in society will be given a chance and be relocated and resettled in society.
The RRA rebels have been fighting to establish a government based on the biblical Ten Commandments of God in Uganda, and its core force is comprised of abducted children. Human rights groups say that the government option to recruit former child soldiers to the army is likely to lure many of them into service, because that is what they have known in life. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Joshua Charimpa reporting from Kampala, Uganda.
Brazil and India pledged to bring a new global order today, one that gives countries in the third world more clout in international affairs. The statements came as Indian Prime Minister Manmohan Singh paid a visit to Brazil, inking a series of trade deals involving technology and alternative energy development. Binu Alex has the story.
A major economic and political cooperation initiative is what the leaders of three democracies will discuss at the India-Brazil-South Africa, or IPSA, Dialogue Forum. The forum was created in 2003 to improve ties between the three countries. Prime Minister of India Manmohan Singh, who had a meeting with the President Lula da Silva of Brazil, today called for closer ties between the three countries. Nine agreements were signed between India and Brazil in diverse fields, which include energy, namely ethanol and biodiesel, aviation and oil exploration. Mr. Singh said India and Brazil would work together to reform the UN Security Council to bring a new world order more participatory for developing countries.
India and Brazil are large pluralistic democracies. The significance of this bilateral visit is further enhanced by the holding of the first IPSA summit.
The current bilateral trade between India and Brazil stands at around $2.5 billion and is expected to reach $10 billion in the next 5 years if the present growth rate is maintained. India exports diesel, coal and chemicals to Brazil, while the latter exports sugar, soybeans, oil and iron ore. After the summit-level talks with the Indian Prime Minister, the Brazilian President urged for a greater liberalization of agriculture imports by developing countries and to ensure equitable international trade.
We have worked together in the WTO, and we are both united in our desire for the successful conclusion of the Doha round of negotiations. We have been partners in the G4 efforts to work towards expansion of the permanent membership of the UN Security Council.
Tomorrow, all eyes will be on the Indian Prime Minister's possible meeting with Pakistan President Pervez Musharraf during the Non-Aligned Movement Summit in Havana, where India is likely to press for more concrete actions to curb terrorism. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Binu Alex.
The murder of two political activists is shaking El Salvador. The government denies the killings have anything to do with politics, but community organizations point out the victims were tortured, the same way government-backed paramilitaries did during the Civil War in the 1980s. This is the first time since a peace accord was signed in 1992 that such a murder has been recorded. From San Salvador, Ricardo Martinez reports.
Hundreds protested in San Salvador, El Salvador last week after the murder of two important historical activists who worked with the guerrillas during the Civil War in the 80s. Ex-directors of Radio Venceremos Independent Media, Francisco Manzanares and Juana Monjarras, parents of Marina Manzanares Mariposa, were tortured and killed. Civil rights organizations are demanding an investigation into the case. Isabel Hernández is a friend of the Manzanares family and a member of Asociación para el Desarrollo Comunal del Salvador, CORDES.
Bueno, nosotros consideramos de que este hecho ha causado bastante.
Well, we consider that this has caused indignation because the murdered people were older. Also, the people are afraid because they don't know how it occurred, who did it, and there hasn't even been an investigation.
No ha habido ninguna investigación.
José Durán is the top consul in Suchitoto, which is headed by the FMLN political party.
Sí, creemos de que, digamos, lamentablemente es un asesinato que vino a conmover al municipio y en este caso a nuestra comunidad.
We believe that, lamentably, this was a murder that has been able to emotionally affect the community, and we're waiting for the investigation to get to the bottom of this and discover what happened, because this was a murder that was very planned. We haven't seen a murder like this in a very long time, and unfortunately, this murder happened to this family, and we think that there are actors here that are, as you say, covered by the dark sectors of this country, still. But we cannot say where they're from. But this is not your everyday, normal murders.
During the 80s,
8,062 people were killed in El Salvador for political involvement. 600 were massacred in what is known as the Zumpus Massacre in a military operation coordinated by governments of El Salvador and Honduras. Blanca Meléndez is a director of a communal civil and human rights association in Suchitoto.
Significa un retroceso, digamos, en ese anhelado.
It means going backwards in history, backwards in the supposed peace that was made during the years that the accords were signed. Now these lamentable episodes are occurring and the people are scared.
La población también está temerosa.
The current situation could affect the 1992 peace agreement signed by the government and the FMLN guerrillas. Recently, Congress agreed to investigate and provide a report for submissions to the United Nations or international human rights organizations. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Ricardo Martinez in El Salvador.
Free Speech Radio News is a worker-run collective. Simba Russo and Monica Lopez produce our newscast. Shannon Young is our headlines editor. Leanne Caldwell is our Washington editor. Our technical production team at KPFA in Berkeley is Antonio Ortiz and Eric Klein. For archives of this or any other newscast, please visit our website at www.fsrn.org, www.fsrn.org. In Berkeley, I'm Aaron Glantz, sitting in for Aldo Bogado.